Hey everybody, this is the Aesop Guy. We are on a journey to an Aesop and beyond, season five. So welcome to the podcast today. And we're so excited because this is one of those episodes where we get to interview a company that's gone through the whole ESOP process and just sharing lots of experience and maybe some wisdom around the choices that they made and how they got through the whole process itself. So with all of that, I wanted to welcome Nancy Pratt, who is the CFO of Frederick Durr and Construction, out of Sarasota, Florida. Nancy, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, real quick, Nancy, as we jump in, one of the things I'll just kind of talk a little bit about is just the structure of your ESOP, so people understand kind of how that is or how what it looks like. So, you are an S corporation, and you guys stayed an S corporation, and you're 100% ESOP.
Yes, we are. We have been an S, and we stayed an S.
Great. So let's talk a little bit before we jump into the story of your ESOP, just from your background. I know you're primarily on the financial part of the company, and you work through as a, you know, doing all the financial reports and that type of thing. How did you get to the company? Kind of tell your story real quick. Just what was your experience before that, and how long have you been at the company?
Well, I specialize in construction accounting, and I was in public accounting for a firm in New York that was 90% construction industry. And from there, I stayed in the industry because I really enjoyed it. And I had been with large home builders and land developers quite a few years. And we kind of hit the 2008 crash, as they say. And I got out of home building and still stayed in construction. And then I ended up finding Frederick Durr & Company. The person before me was retiring, and it was a good fit.
Perfect. Yeah. So as you got to the company, where were they in terms of like their plan? So Fred Durr obviously is the owner of the main owner of the company at the time that you came in. And when you came in, what was the conversations around, like what was happening with things like succession planning and exit planning, and what were you guys as a team doing? Because I know you were not just you, but other people in the company are, you know, key level people working on not only the day-to-day things, but also kind of futuristically planning out what happens next.
Right. Okay. So Mr. Durr was in his late 80s. He had not been involved in day-to-day management of the business whatsoever for many, many years. He would come in, sit on some meetings, but it was pretty much turned over for the most part to our president. And the company had a very a history of very long tenure with management employees. So I've been here 4 years, but most of my coworkers have been here anywhere from 20 to over 40 as far as management, which is
crazy, right?
A great feeling because there's a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So succession planning was a very high priority. I know from coming from a family where my dad owned his own business, it's one of those things that it jumps on people very quickly. And if you own your own company, you love what you do, it's so dear to your heart and soul, to your life. And it's very hard to let go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why it went so long. But it was an important thing that we had to focus on. And we started focusing on that pretty much. I was here 4 years, probably into the first year, and went through a series of steps before mm-hmm. we got to where we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what sort of, I know with, you know, this is something that people, all companies kind of like grapple with as far as like, which direction should I go? What sort of options for, you know, for Mr. Durr did you guys kind of lay out when you looked at, you know, what would be the best thing for him, of course, and for the company? Mm-hmm. You know, were you looking at like an outward sale? Were you looking at, you know, obviously ESOP at that point, or what were some of the mm-hmm. options?
Initially, ESOP wasn't the first option. It kind of wasn't something we really were thinking of up front, especially due to the age of our main shareholder. Normally the ESOPs happen when they're much younger, but we started looking at sales. So we basically started interviewing brokers, and we worked with one for a while, and we put a lot of information together for that. And then we switched brokers, and we found one we really felt good about. And they actually brought us a buyer, a strategic buyer, very good strategic buyer.
Wow.
Yes. So we did have a deal that was in due diligence. That was a year before our ESOP closed. And our owner decided that, I think it's, as I said, it's a lot of personal passion for your company and what you've built over the years, which some people don't understand that, but it's not as simple as just selling, leaving your employees. People have that have been here 20, 40 years, most of their lives. So I think it was more of something that it was a legacy. It was a, I want to hand this to the people that built it with me. Which is unusual, and it's absolutely fabulous when you think about
that. It really is.
So basically it went from having a buyer that wanted to close ASAP, great buyer, and then he decided, no, he didn't really look into ESOP much. We talked about it. We did talk about it as a possibility if things, maybe if the sale options didn't work, but he said, I want to look at that. We didn't look at that enough.
Sure.
So then we started started working on the ESOP. So that's the start of the ESOP. That's our history before we got to the determination that we wanted to investigate a sale to an ESOP.
Yeah, so that's very, I mean, it's honestly very, very normal. Like the path, I mean, everybody kind of looks at that and says, all right, now here are our main options, and there's pros and cons. And I think what you hit on was really, it's really important, and it's really hard sometimes to, because we all want to kind of say, like, what are your pros and cons? What are your reasons? And be very, very logical about the approach. But when you actually start, I think the idea is like when you start really investigating. You guys got all the way to the level of having a buyer, and then Mr. Durr saying, no, I don't think I want to do that, which maybe some people might look at that and say, wow, that's kind of maybe irrational. But I think what probably happened is it now really became more real to him than what it was before when you're just analyzing these options. And so, that's a big element of it. And it's hard to kind of put into exact words maybe why. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that happen in someone's mind when they've built a company. And even from a psychological standpoint, like they kind of do care about not just the company, but the people that helped build it.
Exactly. And I know that's difficult for people to understand. I mean, when a buyer comes in that says, I want a quick close, couple of months, let's get this done. And someone would say, well, why would you cancel that or something? Why did you not go through? But you can't get to the psyche behind someone that worked very hard over the years to build something. And especially the dynamic of this company that has employees that have been here most of their lives, which is beyond belief in nowadays. That's very unusual. So between the management level employees that have the experience and have been doing these jobs and running the company for so many years, it wasn't like throwing everything into some questionable mix of, well, how could this end up? The same people would be running the company that had been. So it was. I'm sure a struggle of a decision for him to make. It can't be easy, and no one can really understand.
No.
Unless you're in that situation,
exactly.
I'm sure it's very difficult.
Yeah, I think that's the the main thing is like you really can't understand unless it's you sitting behind the table thinking about what your best options are. And it's not like selling your car or something. I mean, there's a lot of mm-hmm. parts and pieces.
Mm-hmm. So you got, and it's not only financial. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things. I mean, ESOP has had a lot of financial pluses mm-hmm. to him.
Sure. Yeah.
Along the way, which you can talk about.
Sure.
But it wasn't that. It was the legacy of leaving it to a group of people that were, have been with you for so long, and to have your name on it that was always the same way. The logo wouldn't change. The name wouldn't change. There's a lot more personal things behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could feel good. I mean, honestly, you can feel good about like looking back and look at your life and saying, wow, you know, I not only helped build this company, you know, of course, as a team that does that, but I know that the future of the company is going to be consistent and not be disrupted by, you know, an outside buyer. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Right. I think that was his point. And he has a lot to be proud of where he did bring the company.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are very, right now, grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even now, but as time goes on, as we'll talk a little bit about where you guys are in the first year of your ESOP, it'll start to open up to everybody, and like their eyes will open to the actual reality of it, which takes a little time. Mm-hmm. When you go back to the story of like when you guys were with, you know, you went through that strategic buyer, then you kind of pivoted into the ESOP. What did you, I mean, you were still working with the same advisor, or how'd that work at that point?
We actually we went to a ESOP consultant that was known by our broker, mm-hmm. and we were looking at that. This all happened before the holiday in 2022. So we left for Christmas, and all that came in the next year thinking, okay, our new game plan is really looking into the ESOP.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we started the year of 2023. And we worked with one consultant for a while, and a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And then our bonding company referred us to you
mm-hmm.
and Hopkins, and we talked to you, and we were very impressed with your knowledge and how you were advising us. So we made a switch, and I think that was maybe last March or April, maybe?
Yep. That's yeah, I believe that is. Yeah, it happened.
Started working with you?
That's correct, yeah.
Battery low. Oops. Please charge now.
We learned the first time when we initially started looking at the ESOP before we had contracted with your firm. I think we learned that a few large topics in this is you have to know your values.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know your company value.
Yep.
You have to have a value that's fair. It can't be overvalued, and it can't be undervalued, because if it works structurally, financially, it's going to cash flow for one, it's going to cash flow for the other. If it's not going to, it won't. If it doesn't work for the buyer ESOP, it's not going to work for the seller shareholder.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extremely important for the values to be fair.
Yep.
And not to overvalue the company, to try to get more out and more up front, because if the company can't financially maintain those level of cash flows and that debt service, that's detrimental to both parties. It won't work.
And it's really detrimental, you know, to the selling shareholder is mm-hmm. because they're going to be left with this, whether you do some bank finance or not, you're going to be left with the seller note that, you know, and I think what we're talking about is that the sustainability of the company, like that's so critical. And honestly, from my experience kind of doing ESOPs throughout the country, it's not unusual to have an advisor that you start with, and then the company realizes some things in the process, and then they pivot. It sounds kind of strange. Like you would think that this is pretty straightforward, but the approaches to ESOPs honestly are a little bit all over the place, which you know, doesn't make a lot of sense to me anyway, because it's a regulated transaction by the Department of Labor. So it should be pretty consistent, you know, across the board. But the reality is it's really not. And you know, when you think about not just the valuation like you're talking about, but you have the advisor, in my opinion, has the responsibility to both the shareholder and the company to make sure that those that balance is there, so that there is a win-win and everybody then can feel good about like, hey, put this deal together and close, and then look back and say, all right, this is actually going to work for the long term.
Absolutely. And as a financial person in the company, I find that one of the very most important things is to have a clear profitability cash flow history of your company mm-hmm. for many years. Yes. I mean, I'm tracking back to 2007, and long before I got here, I have information and I use for projections and budgets. So when you really know your numbers, what you're capable of, you can look at trends, you can get a better idea of what you can, type of debt you can service.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that is the one of the most important things, is to have a hold on your numbers and don't let anyone else come in and put a projection out for 5 years that you can't look at and say, well, this is basically, I worked with you on this. This is my projection mm-hmm. with you, and I know that this is valid.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can't let anyone else from the outside come in and do a projection, because it has to be what you know your company can maintain.
Exactly.
And that's how I felt when we interviewed you the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I said, he's the one.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we had great references and things from our bonding company. I mean, that right there is an enormous reference.
Yep.
But the points that you brought to us were things that we had already gone through for a few months and kind of learned the hard way, saw those items and already had been through that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it would have been nice up front if we met your firm up front. That's
sure.
fine. That would have been great.
Yeah.
And we did pay a lot of money to get to a point before you of trying to bring in another, going with another consultant. But I think it was a good learning process.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, that's part of, you know, education is expensive anyways, right? Anyways, how
right.
we look at it.
Right.
But, you know, I've seen this happen in the industry where, and it's not, you know, I certainly don't want to give all, hey, I'm this great advisor, but I do, cause there's other people that do it like I do. Like they're very conscious of that. So it's just trying to find, like for companies that are in that place that you guys are in, it's just trying to find the right advisor. I have seen, because other people like that I deal with, like CPA firms across the country, and there, I've seen deals blow up, you know, after the fact, because they did not do what we're talking about. And one of the things you kind of said, I think it's important too, because somebody's probably listening like, yeah, I'm the finance person. And the worst thing I think a finance person can be, like the internal person can have to deal with in a company, is not being able to pay what's owed, you know, whether that's accounts payable or the loan payment or whatever it is. If there's not enough cash flow, the finance person is the one that pays the price. And that's a nightmare job. Like, and I'm sure you probably have experienced that in some point in your career.
Absolutely. Yeah. Going through the mortgage crash.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I have experience.
People are calling you, hey, you know, when can we get paid? You're like, I don't know. But, you know, you don't want to purposefully, like the thing about an ESOP, I mean, with an economic downturn, that's one thing, but we're doing this to the company, right? We're putting on all this debt. And if it's not done responsibly, then the people that are going to be paying the price are not the advisors. They're going to be the people that are sitting in your seats that are like, oh man, what did we do? And then you have to renegotiate debt. If you have to work with the trustee, you know, And some companies go out of business. I mean, that's the reality of this, because cash flow is everything. Cash is king, all the business things that we talk about. And if you don't have enough cash coming in and going out, or, you know, if more cash is going out, it's like you're not the United States government. You can't just raise taxes and be like somehow. You know. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got political.
Well, also, when we looked at our projections, we also looked at trend history, mm-hmm. industry, economic trends. We know some years are up more, some are down. And we had to really look at the history of that to determine if what we were proposing was viable.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of what I've seen in the industry, the ESOP industry specifically, is there's this, and we'll talk a little bit about this just from a benefit standpoint, but there's this, oh, well, don't worry about it because the company's not going to pay taxes anyway, so you guys are going to be fine. And that might be the case, but it really may not be the case. And I think without looking at within the feasibility modeling, which is what we're going to want to do with every client, is going to be like, how much exactly are you going to be paying for the company on the senior debt? Like down to the penny of the amortization schedule. And then from there, how much are you paying on the seller note? And then how much cash flow do you really truly have by fiscal period each year to make sure that we've actually done that? And then how do we test that? Well, we're going to test that based on a potential for that to be downturned, right? So if the company's forecast comes down, at what point will you still be fine, right? And those are the things that I think help provide some wiggle room and buffer and help to make sure everybody feels, like it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That we were very confident. I was confident that what we came up with was a plan that we could work with.
Yeah. You know, what I liked about your situation, because you guys already had one of the things about ESOPs is like where people are, companies are in terms of the leadership development part. Like you guys already had a very solid leadership team. And, and I think for some companies, they're still building that. Where the owner is still relatively involved. In your situation, the owner was really not involved through this whole process. I mean, you kind of went through that whole hurdle. So management succession was all taken care of. And when you got into the actual analysis, I think that puts you into a position where you guys were able to really function well in that. And there's not this like back and forth between, what are we going to do on leadership? So with leadership itself, I guess, what would you say about the importance of that in terms of the future ESOP company and how important is that for you guys in terms of managing and hitting your targets and all the other stuff?
Well, extremely important. One obstacle that was not in our way was that at the same time as this whole conversion to the ESOP, that we would have to change the leadership, the day-to-day leadership. Mm-hmm. Everything in that respect was the same because our president, Keith, had been running the company for many, many years. So all the other parts, there weren't any of those other moving parts as far as operationally.
Mm-mm. Right.
There are a lot of financial moving parts. Most of the pain came on the financial people to get the transaction to try to get a transaction, all these years that was going to be beneficial to both parties. But the operational side of it was not a big problem for us. One thing regarding ESOP, there's a lot of, since it's highly regulated, there's a lot of committees that we had to form and different things like that internally. So, but we have help with that. We mm-hmm. have an attorney that specializes in that. We have a trustee. We have a third-party administrator. So we're not out there alone with these mm-hmm. items.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, because I think sometimes, especially people that are brand new to ESOPs, you start throwing out like the roles and responsibilities you've got your own roles and responsibilities within the company, but you do have different ESOP professionals that are participating in that. So why don't we walk through that just briefly, just so you're like, as you talk about the trustee, you know, picking a trustee and how that was for you guys. And then the, of course, they're responsible for the transaction and eventually become the independent trustee. And then you have their valuation firm, the ESOP attorney on our side. So in terms of putting together those professionals, like what stood out to you the most in that process of building the team of people?
Extremely important. Mm-hmm. Especially with, first of all, the ESOP attorney, very important. The transaction is cumbersome. It's a very cumbersome transaction to close. Mm-hmm. And having an experienced lawyer that works with ESOP transactions is extremely important. And we maintain the same attorney that is our current ESOP attorney that takes care of corporate issues and minutes and things like that. So that was extremely important.
And then the...
I'm hearing an echo in the background.
Are you? Okay. I think we're fine. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I think with, you know, and then we have the whole banking part of it. In looking at your structure specifically, you guys, we had a bank come in and they did the senior, what we call senior debt, which is a very specific part of the debt structure. So when you do a leveraged buyout for an ESOP, you have senior debt and then the remaining pieces get put into the seller note. You know, from a banking standpoint, you know, in your situation, you guys had to move banks, you know, it wasn't the mm-hmm. same bank. What was difficult about that for you? And I know probably part of this comes down to who we choose. And, I think we made a really good choice on the bank.
Since we are a construction company, is finding a bank that would accept an ESOP structure, mm-hmm. And provide senior financing, well, a line of credit, revolving line of credit, all at the same time. Now, that was a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
And we found through your assistance of working with this particular lender, we found a lender that came in and understands ESOPs. That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Our current banking relationship, we had asked them if they would be willing to work with an ESOP. And they said, no, they just don't. So we did have to find another bank
mm-hmm.
to yep. finance our line of credit and our senior debt. And we really found a fabulous group, and we're very happy with them. We did have to move all the banking, everything, operating accounts, payroll accounts, everything over. But it one of those things that it's a little painful at the time, but it wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we find we're in a good place now with them. And actually pretty fortunate that we were able to find one that understands the ESOP structure and is not afraid of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And especially with your situation, like you have the business model really requires that you have that line of credit. And so you have, when you do look for a bank, it's like you have to know that you got to look at the transaction need and then you have to look at other banking credit requirements. Like, what do we need to make sure we function? And I get this question from people, or sometimes it's not a question. It's like, I didn't know we had to do that. What I mean by that is like any bank that's going to finance the term loan for the ESOP deal is going to be taking over the entire banking relationship. And I think for some companies, that's a big, I mean, especially the finance person, right? That's a big ordeal because it's going to fall back on the finance person to up, you know, do the new accounts. And nowadays it's like the Patriot Act, it's not easy. Like, and then you have treasury services and you have all the other pieces, parts and pieces. It's not just, hey, we're going to do this term loan. Everybody's happy, right? It's just, so we were very, very fortunate, to be honest with you, that we found one and that was really good in your industry too with construction. It's not always, you know, it's not always the most favored industry, you know, just because of the cyclicality of it. So that I think that worked really well. But I think part of it, when they look at it, you know, you are underwriting as a bank, you're underwriting the team, the company's financials. And as you talked about, you guys had such a strong history of understanding your cash flows. And I think if I connect that back to the way the banks look at it, is like they are, this is a cash flow loan. And the more you, the more we can present well on that, the more favorable we're going to have a situation with the bank where they can really understand what's coming and going, especially when you're going through, you guys have gone through different recessions and ups and downs. So you have all that data. And I think that's really critical.
Yes, absolutely. And we're in an industry that requires surety bonding also. So between the bonding and the line of credit, needs, we have always had to provide audited financial statements. So the fact that we have history of audited financial statements helps as well when you're looking for a new bank to come in and basically take everything. Because people have to think of, with an ESOP-owned company, they're losing their personal guarantor.
Mm-hmm.
There is no one that's going to guarantee that loan. But if the bank understands the regulation of the ESOP and how it works, I would think they would find more comfort in that. And I think the ones that are educated on that would see that. I think it's a plus,
mm-hmm.
but not all banks do.
No, not all banks do. And that's one of the things too, like in my experience, is you got to get that done early in the process. Mm-hmm. if they wait too long at the end, then you try to put it at the end. You're really not sure exactly what the bank is going to do. But most of the time, I think that happens because everybody's just myopically transaction focused. Like that's all they can think about is the transaction. And you really do have to have a bigger picture on the relationships that you're building. If you're going to move the bank, it's like, that's a big, big deal. Your situation with the bonding company, if we come back to that, is a major, major issue for contractors. And let's talk about that a little bit too, because it's not easy sometimes for the bonding company to embrace the idea that when we look at some of this, we're actually taking your balance sheet and we're in a sense ruining it. we're just ruining it with debt, right? And then the contra equity account on the inside note, which basically creates just most of the time negative book value, and then mm-hmm. so now they're finance people on the bonding company, right? They're the underwriters. They're just not used to this, right? Like, they're like, what has happened to your balance sheet, right? If they don't understand ESOPs. And so the one thing I think is important if you are a contractor is get that done early. Like don't, and in our situation, it was good because, your bonding agent actually referred me in. So we were, her and I were talking the whole thing, as we went through the whole process. So, but the worst thing can be like you close your deal and the bonding company now is looking at it after the fact. And they're like, what did you guys do? Now we're like, I don't know if we can bond that. And what are they going to do? They're going to be like, oh no, you could lose possible revenue as a company post ESOP. That would be that you thought you had in your forecast. So that's a huge thing, I think, for any contractor.
Yes, that was one of the most important issues. And it was good to know that you had closed deals for some of their construction clients, mm-hmm. ESOP deals. So we know it's possible, mm-hmm. but if you read a lot of documentation on ESOPs, a lot of documentation articles, they say it could be extremely challenging mm-hmm. for a construction industry that needs surety bonding.
Yep.
Because of what the transaction does to the balance sheet. And that was one item that we had to know up front that we could make happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think we did early on, and I think for our story, we kept them appraised of, hey, where we are. And it's because things can change a little bit when you go from the beginning of the process of planning and to the end, sometimes your forecast changes or that kind of thing. But we stayed pretty consistent with it. And I think we kept them updated and they were good to go. To be honest, there wasn't really any major issues. In fact, I think we had to, keep reminding them, hey, we're doing this and all that. So I think they just felt really comfortable with the process.
Yes. And it did go very smoothly. And I think it's because it was addressed mm-hmm. from the beginning.
One of the things I was going to talk about a little bit within that is I think with contractors, especially if you're going from a 0 to 100% ESOP, there's a lot of contractors that don't do that because it is hard to bite off that much debt and the bonding companies being okay with that. So a lot of times you'll see a contractor go from, and that really wasn't an option for us because of the dynamics of the shareholder group and all that. But mm-hmm. it's easier for them to bite off 30% and then we do another 30 and then, you know, just kind of chunk it out. In your situation, mm-hmm. like one of the things is really important with that is the combination between, if that's not going to happen, if you're not going to do a partial, is going to be the how much senior debt should we get with respect to seller note. And I think the guideline here is that the bonding company is going to be a lot more comfortable with less senior debt and more mm-hmm. seller note. And it's kind of logical because there's a lot more control over the seller note as a subordinated note to the bonding company than there is for the bank's senior debt position. I see sometimes the contractor people, they want to get a big liquidity event and have this huge senior debt, even though the banks are not probably going to do that anyways. It's really dangerous because you do jeopardize, if you're trying to do 100%, you do jeopardize or strain that bonding company relationship where you're like, you do not want to have a problem down the road with the bonding company.
No. And definitely in no way. That's not something we can risk.
No.
In this industry.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and the other thing about your deal is you guys had, and this is just as we look at the dynamics, you had some real estate involved as well as the operating valuation. So you have the operating company and then some real estate that just is part of it that we ended up selling all of that to the ESOP. So mm-hmm. as we went through that part of the process, I would just say kind of in general, that's a little more complicated because you have this element of real estate. From your standpoint, you know, how did you perceive that and what challenges did you see coming that way for you?
Well, with the real estate, I thought that was a big plus. I mean, we have in our area in Sarasota, Florida, our real estate values are very strong. So having that real estate portion, securing a lot of this for the lender was really positive for us.
It gave you some real collateral as opposed to this.
It really did.
This air ball.
It did. Yeah. And some of the real estate was all sold because it was owned by the company. Our corporate office is still, we rent it from the prior owner. Mm-hmm. He owned it personally. So we have a 10-year lease. But having that real estate piece and where it's located, the collateral with that was actually very positive for us. And then the lender, of course, between the line of credit and the senior note, it's guaranteed by the real estate, and then they have a blanket on equipment and things like that. But they're pretty much, they're all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Having the real estate was just one more thing that they like to have. Mm-hmm. They prefer to have something like that tangible.
Yep. Yeah, I think so
that was positive for us.
That is positive. And I think that the thing I would say in closing, the documentation, and this is when you do have real estate, you want to look at like, how do you document that without having a lot of extra expenses? Because when the bank's perfecting a mortgage, it's like there's a lot of other things like appraisals and environmentals. In some cases, in your situation, we were able to work that out in what they call an abundance of caution, which is basically the bank does take a mortgage on it, but they kind of relieve the rights of perfecting that mortgage. So they don't have to go through all of that additional expense. And it can also kind of elongate a closing because there's other, you know, if you have to get all these other reports, then it becomes a bit of a challenge for the closing date. So just as a point of, I mean, you're absolutely right. It gives them a sense of collateral that they didn't have before. So it strengthens their senior debt position on a non-recourse loan. Of course, we don't have a guarantee. But at the same time, one of the things I try to identify early is what are they going to require in the closing? And not only that, like what attorney are they going to use too? Because those things can be, mm-hmm. you know, you talked a little bit about this being, you know, an ESOP closing is cumbersome. I mean, there's no doubt. There's, remember our call?
I've had plenty of real estate closings over the years and land development.
Yeah.
This is definitely cumbersome with all the assignments and it was very unusual.
Yeah. It's, and that's why you got to get like really organized up front. And I think the main thing is as much as there is to do in a closing for an ESOP, if you have the right people in the seats, you know, in the closing calls, it's gonna come together. It's just, especially if you haven't been through it. I know with you're kind of working through that. I mean, you're like, you know, what is going on? Like what's, you know, you have, I will tell you really realistically in your position, Nancy, you're going to have, you experience this. You have a lot of work to do, you know. You got to run down this, you got to run down that, make sure that all those, you know, the closing checklists are done correctly. And it does tax you a little bit, especially if you're trying to run your business as well.
It was a lot around the closing. I mean, the whole transaction it's a lot,
yep.
But around the closing, there was a lot. Of course we had a lot of moving parts and we had a majority shareholder. Then we had a lot of very minority shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it more cumbersome.
Oh yeah. That's right.
We weren't we had 10, there was one majority shareholder,
mm-hmm.
and then 9 very minority ones.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of notes, a lot of transactions, a lot of documents.
That's right. Yeah.
But overall, I think it went as smooth as it possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
Post-transaction, as far as accounting-wise, myself and my accounting manager had a lot of post-transaction things to do.
To clean up. Yeah. Yeah. To document.
A lot. I mean, we have all the new notes. We have interest only notes. We have P&I, the senior debt.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that have to be taken care of subsequent.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, we're mid-March and I already received my 2023 audit report.
Yay. Yep. That's great.
So, I mean, it's, even though we had so many things to do with the transaction, it really didn't cause anything else to fall behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's because you guys were working your brains out too, to be honest with you.
But we were working a lot.
Yeah, you were working a lot. Yeah.
But honestly, we really feel like we're very fortunate to be able to have this opportunity.
Good.
In many ways.
Yep. Well, now it's done, you know, and you're now what's off the table is like, now we don't have to worry about that anymore. Right. So, I mean, think about like all the years you guys were working through the succession and exit plan and, you know, be bopping around with strategic buyers and stuff. So it's just probably very nice to be kind of through that part of, and now we have a new chapter, which is the future ESOP company.
Right. And I'm actually looking forward to the time when the first reports come out where the employees actually participants get their participant values. Because there's a lot of people, I'm sure, that really don't understand, even though we had a meeting with one of your staff to explain it, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that it hasn't really sunk into a lot of people that are, you know, work in the field that don't see certain things every day.
It's true. And it does take a little time. And it's like ESOP education is not an event. It really is about an ongoing discussion, you know, and because there's so much for them to know, but it becomes real when the participant statements come out. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as we kind of wind down, I think the main thing I would say is like, cause you do have just this fresh amount of knowledge and wisdom that you gained over the last year. Ups and downs, things like that. What would you share with people like, hey, what is the piece of wisdom? Like, what would you tell them, you know, whether they're doing your job is or whatever, what should they be thinking about if they're going to be going into an ESOP transaction?
I think one of the most important things is working with someone that you feel you have the utmost of trust in. Because you really need to have someone that is looking out for both sides, seller and buyer. If it doesn't work for one, it won't work for the other. Mm-hmm. You know, look at valuations. Make sure that no one's trying to overvalue anything to get excess cash out up front. Those things I think are really important. They could save a lot of time and pain along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But know your cash flows, know your business, know your history. Really look at your financials. Try to be very conservative of your projections because you don't know economically what's going to happen. And I think if all those things are really coming together and you have that consultant to work with that is going to assist you in leading this in the right direction and that has the experience and the knowledge, I think it'll be a lot of work, but mm-hmm. I think in the end it's very worth it.
Yeah. No, I think I appreciate your thoughts on that and your advice because I think it is really in your perspective. Honestly, I think I've done a lot of these interviews with the shareholders that sold. So just having that, I think this is probably one of the first where we've done, hey, this is the finance person who's in charge of all that. So it's a great perspective. I appreciate too. I think one of the things that is important, as you said, is like, you know, we got to get the job done. But at the same time, what I always try to tell people is take your time and do the right planning up front and then it'll go smoothly. So where I see problems is people try to get into a race and they're like, boom, 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 let's get this out. Let's get this done by whatever. And I think that can really create some problems. Like, you know, the adage of haste makes waste. You know, I'm not ever as an advisor, I'm not ever pushing people to get to the next step. Like if we got to take our time, let's get deeper into the forecast. Let's get deeper into the feasibility before you bring on all these people, like, and that's the trustee, the valuation firm, before you start spending money on all this, like, let's just really take our time. I've had ESOPs where we spent years, honestly, just planning and it went back and forth and we were like, all right, let's consider that. And then finally they were ready. And I'm like, oh, good. If you're ready, then I'm ready, you know, but if you're not ready, I'm not ready. Cause you really are the ones that are going to have to walk through that. So I think that's important. Especially, you know, with some people that just feel the sense of urgency. And I feel like too, mm-hmm. the other part is if your advisor is pushing you with this sense of urgency, just understand why they're doing that. I mean, if there's something there that maybe I don't know about, but if they're doing it for the wrong reasons, which is they want to get this thing going for themselves, then that's not mm-hmm. right. You know, you need to right. ask the questions about like right. what we're talking about.
Well, another thing with us that we were fortunate to have is we had an offer the prior year before we closed the ESOP, we had an actual offer from an outside buyer. We had appraisals done, equipment appraisals, real estate appraisals. So we had a really good handle of values, not just asset values, not just enterprise value. And just to have that information, I think was really important as well.
Yeah, that definitely helped you guys because you weren't starting off with just a zero.
Right, valuations, zero. Having that valuation, kind of that range mm-hmm. from here to here,
yeah.
where you know it's somewhere in this range and you're not overvaluing and you're not undervaluing
mm-hmm.
because that is pretty much, I think, would be the ultimate downfall for a transaction like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't manage your commitments over the years, no one wins.
No, that's right. That's right. No, well, it was so wonderful to talk to you about it. You guys did a phenomenal job and it was honestly one of my all-time favorites of doing ESOP work.
Oh, so, well, that means a lot to us. Yeah, well, yeah. We actually enjoyed working with you. We enjoyed working with every one of our consultants that we found along the way and all those from our trustee to our lawyer to our TPA, where we will be working with many years to come. Oh, and our valuation.
Yeah. Yep.
Company.
Yep.
So we actually have a whole new group of people that are here for us. We have questions and concerns, and we feel confident and very fortunate.
Wonderful. Well, Nancy, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate you just taking some time for us to go over that. It's really helpful.
Well, thank you for everything you've done in this whole process.
Well, great. Well, for everybody else, thank you for listening. And, you know, we'll see you on our next step on this journey to an ESOP.